on a windswept hill in an English countryside stands a drab gray slate tombstone. The tombstone, like a lot of ours out here, have a faint etching. And this tombstone read this: "Beneath this stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue." Now, I will tell you, I hope that's not etched on my tombstone, and I hope you guys aren't the ones writing it. Today we talk about the tongue. James suggests that what you do with your tongue will determine what you do with everything else. And he starts off in James chapter 3, and you're invited to turn there, James chapter 3, with these words in verse 1. He says this: "Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." It seems like for James, as he was writing to the many different churches scattered throughout, that there seemed to be a problem within the church. And the problem was that there was a lot of gossip, a lot of chaos, and people were destroying each other with their tongues. And so he starts off by saying, not many of you should become teachers. Now I think about that and I'm like, no, James, hold on. You don't understand our situation at Slate Hill. We can't find teachers. We need teachers. James, can you just scratch off verse 1? Because this will give people in the church to say, I'm sorry, I cannot teach, because I may be judged more strictly. I've often thought about that I should have read James before I was called into the ministry. Because the words of James strike at my heart, and maybe for some of you. Because what James seemed to be suggesting is this, and it makes me tremble when I speak, that when we speak on behalf of God, that God is recording it. That the judgment we say about someone else in the church becomes a judgment to us. That when we strip down a brother or sister or someone else in the church with our tongues, that judgment, the thing that we are saying about them, becomes our judgment. That gives me pause. That gives me time to tape record the video and the audio of my own life, and maybe the video and the audio of your life, for the implications of what this says. The implications to me, though I fail all the time, is that I need to be maybe a little slower and maybe hold my tongue just a bit. Because it seems that James is saying that the higher we go up, the more responsible we have in teaching, the stricter the judgment, that it boomerangs back to us, and that we have this awesome responsibility as teachers. And it's a heavy weight. And James does not write this as someone who has arrived, who someone that has it all together, because he says in verse 2, "For we all stumble in many ways." Perhaps, just perhaps, James in his own mind rewound back the audio and the visual in his own life. When before the resurrection, some of the things that James maybe said to Jesus. Maybe some things that James said to others about Jesus. And so he knows all about the tongue, the destructive nature, and also the tongue can be an encouragement to others. For some of you, you're saying, well, if it's about teachers this morning, then I can check out, I can pull out my phone, I can check on Facebook, Twitter. Hey, maybe someone texted me right now. And I would say, as someone else has said in ESPN many times, is not so fast. Because every time we open our mouths, as Christians, we are teaching each other and the world what we think about God and humankind. And James goes on to talk about this understanding of, if anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. James convicts me, and maybe convicts you, that he says that if you control your tongue, everything else will fall in place. He seems to suggest that the tongue is the biggest problem that we have. That if we do something with our tongue, the other parts of our lives might fall into place just a little better. He seems to say that if you control your tongue, you can control anything else. What he seems to suggest is that what comes out of your mouth is usually an indication of the health of our hearts. And then he goes on to give a couple examples. He says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or he says, hey, here's another example. Take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are stirred by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. So he gives two examples. He says this bridle. He says you have this huge horse, massive horses, hundreds, maybe 1,000-pound horse. And this tiny bit in the mouth of the horse can completely turn the body of a horse in whatever direction you want it to go. He says, so are our tongues. And he says about the ships. He said, ship, you know, these big ships, and we look at these massive pieces of steel, tons, thousands of tons of steel going across water. And he says, what stirs that and can make that turn is a small little rudder that is determining the direction of the ship. And no matter the forces of the wind and the things that they encounter, this rudder steers the course. So he says, as the bit to the horse, as the rudder to the ship, so the tongue to us. And the other thing he says, and when we hear about the tongue, we tend to say, yeah, I know the tongue is bad. The guy at work, you ought to hear him. Or my neighbor, you ought to hear the tongue. And I say, well, I'd like to hear those stories, but maybe save them for another day. Because that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about your neighbor who's not a Christian. He's not talking about your coworker who's not a Christian. He's talking about people within the church body and how we can control our tongues there. And if he means that, then, within the church body, then that means how we talk about each other and how parents to children and children to parents and husbands to wives and wives to husbands. And he suggests that our words are so powerful that our words can keep people on a course, or our words can steer people off into another direction. He's talking about not outside these walls to people that do not know Jesus. He's talking about getting our own house redded up and cleaned. He says, whenever an inflammatory word or a critical word or a put-down word, a destroying word, an unsettling word is spoken, he suggests it's like a spark. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, verse 5, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a forest fire is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of its life on fire, and itself is set on the fire by hell. Have you seen the pictures this week of a spark that was set on fire in California? It was just one match or one spark or lightning or whatever happened that pictures, vivid pictures of whole neighborhoods lay in ruin because of one spark. Just one spark has laid destruction of thousands and thousands of acres in California. See, the people in California understand one thing, that one spark, that one little spark that now has destroyed everything, cannot be taken back. You can't take that spark back. The destruction is still laying all over California. And I think he suggests, like a spark, our words we cannot take back. Like a careless match, a campfire left unattended, a cigarette thrown out of a car can burn down miles of forest. Oh, we wish we could take a word back, because words are so powerful, aren't they? I mean, they're so powerful. They're so much like a spark that can lay ruin to so many things that he says, you probably have that same experience. Some of you have experienced that. Not a spark that your house was burnt down. But he said, maybe this. Something you said to your spouse that is still burning today. It's still laying waste of things that was said 2, 5, 20, 40 years ago. A word that was spoken by your coworker or a fellow church member that you have not forgotten, though they have. He suggests that these words are like a spark that can have destruction over more than we ever intended. There was a young man in Scotland who started spreading rumors in this small town about another person. He was pretty good at it because he spread this rumor around town until this other gentleman's reputation was completely destroyed. And then through the discovery of a few facts, he realized that he had passed on a story that was completely untrue. And so he went to the local pastor and he said, "Pastor, let me tell you what I did. Can I be forgiven of this?" And the pastor said, "Well, what did you do?" And so he told the story of what he did. And he said, "Okay, Pastor, now that I told you, can I be forgiven?" The pastor says, "Well, no, not so quickly. I want you to do something for me. I want you to take this whole bag of feathers And I want you to go around to everyone in that town, and at the gate of their home, I want you to put a feather at each one. And the guy goes, okay, whatever. So he figures whatever it's going to take, so he goes there and drops a feather at the gate of each home in town and the outskirts of town. And he comes back after doing that, and he's exhausted. He says, now, Pastor, I've done what you've told me to do. May I now be forgiven? The pastor says, well, no, not quite yet. Now I want you to take that same bag and go back and pick up all the feathers that were laid at the gate of people's homes. And the young gentleman goes, wait. No, that's impossible. I cannot take those feathers. They have blown away with the wind. I cannot retrieve them. Pastor, that is so absurd. That's what happens with our words. See, when we fly a kite, I love the thing about a kite. We can fly that kite and then the air and the wind goes and that kite's up there and you say, wow, that's beautiful. And we can slowly reel that kite back in, can't we? And use it for another day. When you're out fishing, you throw that line out and you throw it out and you cast it out there. As long as it doesn't get hooked on a tree or something else, you can reel that back in, can't you? Just reel it back in and use that for another day. But God can't cure a word after it's said. The story of the feathers causes many of us, as we hear that story, a guilt inside of us. We think of all the people that we have maybe assassinated by our words. They march before our audio and the visual of our own lives as we process that. And we think of the little words that we dropped. Oh, these seem so innocent. And they really needed to hear it, by the way. We think about the critical things and the cutting things we said about people within this church and in family systems. He talks about the fire of the tongue. He said it makes great boast, but it corrupts the whole person. He suggests the consequences of the tongue. I know. It seems so overblown. That's what I don't like about James. He seems to take things out of context. Things to blow things up and make a big deal out of something that really isn't that big. But you and I know that it's pretty big. Because you and I have been victims of those words. And then James goes on. And he says, all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. So graphic. What he's suggesting is that you go to SeaWorld, I don't know if you can anymore, and Shamu the killer whale, right? That big killer whale is tamed to be able to put on a show for all of us. You take a dog, you take a horse, a wild horse, that we can tame that horse, that we can ride it. But James says, the tongue? You might be able to do a killer whale. You might be able to tame a horse. But by your own human efforts, you cannot tame the tongue. And he goes on, he says in verse 9, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. He says, out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh waters. Let me flesh this out for you this morning. This morning we sang a song as we came in here, the first song. It was, "Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise." And I got to tell you, you sang that great. "The glories of my God and King, the triumphs of His grace." Wow. You know how powerful it is when all these tongues sing that praise to God? Can you imagine God up in heaven hearing that? And James probably heard that also. But he's also suggesting that maybe as we walk out of the door today, maybe before we even get to the parking lot, maybe as we're driving in our car down, we are already using our tongue to destroy and tear people down. Husbands and wives who are part of our church can maybe not get out of the parking lot before something is said. But out of that same tongue, "Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise." And then something else spews out, and James says, there's a disconnect here. There's something about the nature of our heart. He said, fig trees can't produce olives. Come on, you know that. He's suggesting that out of our hearts, out of the overflow of our hearts, the tongue speaks. He said, we can't produce olives only on an olive tree. He talks about the different kinds. It just doesn't seem to mesh. How can you get fresh water and salt water? Have you ever tried that? Put salt water and fresh water together. What do you get? Salt water. And so James is talking about the tongue and the heart. And what James is describing is this. You know, so many times we have something go on in our physical bodies and we say, yeah, the doctor says I need a biopsy. Ooh, a biopsy. Yeah, I need a biopsy to find out what's wrong. And so they go in and sometimes they go in surgery and they'll take a little piece of something out of us. And then we'll get the call. Is it malignant or benign? And what James is suggesting is that we don't need a biopsy of the heart because that biopsy is already there. Because all we need to do to find out the biopsy of our heart, whether it's malignant or benign, whether we're saying good things or we're destroying things, he says, is just the biopsy is just your tongue. That's it. It's your tongue. Whatever comes out of your tongue is the biopsy of your heart. Out of the heart, out of the overflow of our hearts, the mouth speaks. Jesus in Matthew 12 talked about good trees bringing forth good tree fruit and bad trees bad fruit. And he said to the Pharisees this. He said, "Oh, you brood of vipers, out of your evil hearts you speak evil things. How can anything good come out of you? And from the abundance of the heart, so the mouth speaks." It is out of the overflowing of our hearts. I see this image of this overflow, like our hearts are filling up. And what's it filling up with? It's filling with other things. And whatever overflows comes out is the biopsy. And that biopsy results are what comes out of our tongue. And so this morning, I would invite you to stand, please. I want you to invite you to stand and to hear this prayer. You can close your eyes, we pray. It's a words to a hymn. It says this: Lord, speak to me that I may speak in living echoes of thy tone. As thou hast sought, so let me seek thy erring children lost and lone. Oh, teach me, Lord, that I may teach the precious things that thou'st impart, and wing my words that they may reach the hidden depths of many a heart. Oh, fill me with thy fullness, Lord, until my very heart overflows in kindling thought and glowing word, thy love to tell, thy praise to show. And shall it be for all of us as we go this week.